Hi, I'm Trevor Hillegass. I am the Senior Vice President of SpyCloud Labs.
Hi, I'm Damon Fleury. I am the Chief Product Officer at SpyCloud. So, do we just want to do a segment here where we just kind of throw around this confidence gap problem where 86% of leaders express confidence in their ability, but 85% also experienced at least some level of ransomware incident, whether they experienced it themselves or they experienced it through a partner, or something about ransomware impacted them. 85% of them reported that. So, like, what gives here? How is this even possible?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think there's like I don't know, maybe even a philosophical question to this. I mean, we definitely see the same threats that we've seen year over year, and I think at the end of the day, really, it doesn't. I would say that it doesn't matter quite as much what the actual means of access or the way that access was obtained. It's the fact that access was obtained, right? So one of the other things that we noted pretty significantly is that phishing is still a huge problem. In fact, it's even a bigger problem today than it was last year, just based on the numbers. And we're seeing the same kind of thing with phishing that we saw with malware, where more and more threat actors are turning to commodity level kits that are created and polished and, available for sale. And I think what that means, going back to the kind of the point of this of access, is that the barrier to entry is much lower, and it doesn't really require the level of sophistication that it once did in order to get access to, networks or systems. And then, you add in the financial motivations of ransomware. I don't think it should be much of a surprise that we see a lot of, ransomware arising from phishing. And squaring the circle of that confidence gap is I think challenging. I probably don't have the credentials to speak to the psychology potentially at play there, but it is concerning that we seem to overestimate our preparedness.
Yeah. I think that's interesting about this report overall is that, there's a lot of conflicting data within this report in itself, and that, there's so many data points that show that we as an industry think we've got a good handle on security. And even in the survey results, then we point out that we are still constantly falling prey to what are the most sophisticated of attacks. And then how do you reconcile this? And then if you look at the SpyCloud data, what we bring into the report, you find at the same time that it's true. We are falling prey to all of these attacks, right? There is rampant malware, rampant phishing. And so I think one of the data points in the attack, and sorry, in the report, is that 45% of CIOs and CISOs report feeling very confident in their ransomware defense capabilities. But only 28% of security directors and their team leads say the same thing. Then of course our data shows that the vast majority of these organizations are seeing constant malware, constant phishing, constant identity threats as well. I mean, I look at this and think, do we have leaders that are just kind of inflating the capabilities of their organizations? Or maybe we have leaders that are trying to show that they have confidence that even though they cannot stop the attack, right, that they have the right team in place, they have the right tools in place, that they'll be able to weather the attack. Like, I know most organizations now, what, 20 years into ransomware-ish, they can handle a ransomware attack. Like, they get hit by ransomware, they are not likely to shut down the business anymore. Most, I'd say bigger than small enterprise. So they have the thing, they have the backups in place, they have the team in place. They'll figure out a way to get through it. It will be costly, but they will live. So maybe that's what they're trying to say. That's what they're trying to convey, that we're not at zero here with our capabilities. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think proximity probably plays a role here as well. I mean, I once upon a time I was probably closer to that security director role in terms of being a little bit more pessimistic about the reality and the threats that we face. I think there's another way to say that as being perhaps a little bit more realistic, because I do think you said. you said something in your preamble there, which was that, the sophistication of attacks. And I what I've kind of come to over the past couple of years, and I think that this continues to be proven right, I would say, is that, sophistication is not really the right way to think about this, because, time and time again, we see sophistication of adversaries kind of being immaterial to their rate of success. I mean, as we're recording this, obviously the whole Salesloft slash Drift thing just happened and hit the news a couple of weeks ago. And by all, accounts right now, that seems to basically be due to some, tokens that were left in a GitHub repository. And obviously I don't want to speculate on how that access that GitHub repository was made, but at the end of the day, we're not talking about some kind of highly sophisticated zero day or even an end day. We're talking about secrets that were left in a place that they shouldn't have been left, right? So I think that is also very transitive to the conversations about, like we were just talking about phishing kits becoming a commodity, malware having been a commodity for a very long time now, and that just becoming more and more of a, factor of cybersecurity is that criminals can just buy access instead of having to kind of go through this longer, more thought out and more sophisticated, attack plans or developing their own tooling. So I don't know. I do think there's some proximity at play to why we do see this imbalance between, CISOs thinking that they're much more prepared than people that are a little bit more close to, say, incident response or more of a, workaday defensive practices. But I also think that the environment has changed such that the sophistication of threat actors is a lot less of a, factor influencing success than it used to be.
So I think that plays well into another topic that the report wants to talk to through a little bit, and that's specifically like AI and how is AI impacting what you just described, that sophistication of that actor. The report talks to 90% of organiz sorry 92% of organizations agree that AI powered cybercrime has intensified risk, and that they're seeing cybercriminals use it. At the same time, we're a little slower as an industry to adopt AI and to use it to defend ourselves, with only 47% of organizations saying that they leverage AI tools in some way. And I've certainly seen that in all the conversations that we have with customers, that while actors do not care at all about the compliance issues of AI and about what data is used for training, and they are more than happy to use Cursor to write their malware, or more than happy to use ChatGPT to help them do translation, and there's no questions at all about what they can and can't do. So they're fast, right? They're happy to take it, and that's going to make everything slightly more effective. And the businesses are, we're looking at our capability to respond to this, and we want to think about it before we are ready to adopt. And for good reason, right? There's an impact to the business. What do you think there? I mean, it's an interesting dichotomy. It's an interesting problem.
Yeah, no, it reminds this so every time I hear this, it reminds me of a DEF CON talk that I attended years ago, probably 10 years ago now. It was a I wish I could credit the actual speakers, but that nugget of memory has long since left my brain. But I remember they were a Singaporean research group, if that is meaningful to anyone listening. But they did analysis on phishing emails. So if you craft a really, well done phishing email, you take, you go on their LinkedIn and you find their title or maybe where they live, and so you integrate some of that, almost like a social engineering level of very targeted phish, versus the Nigerian prince with misspellings and all, all the crazy stuff we see in most phishing emails. They actually found that there was no, from what I recall at least, hopefully I'm remembering this right, they actually found that there was no significant difference in the success rate between the two. And I believe their kind of conclusion there is that if you're the type of person that's likely to click on a phish, you're probably not really evaluating the context of that message all that much, right? You're kind of skipping ahead. So the reason that makes every time I kind of talk about AI that I think about that is I think AI is really impactful on the margins. Less so kind of at the mean, right? So I think AI becomes very interesting in cybercrime when you talk about what AI can do to either a very low tech a very, unsophisticated cyber criminal and or a very sophisticated, somebody on the other end of that spectrum. So for like the very low tech, think about maybe a member of the Kong or somebody that's just kind of getting into this cybercrime world. Give them AI, maybe they're going to be able to, do some vibe coding and make something that is resembles malware, or maybe they can start with something that's available in a public GitHub repository and then using AI that can, adapt that into something that does maybe more malicious things. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have those, I'll use the term sophisticated actors that maybe with AI, they can scale up a little bit, right? They can do more than they would have been able to do were they doing things manually, or, that phishing example, maybe scale was the problem there, and that research, 10 years ago, it didn't, AI can do a better job of making those targeted phishes. And then if we look at that on the margins, maybe most people are going to click on it regardless, but those few that won't be fooled by the Nigerian prince scam, would be fooled by, what ChatGPT comes up with, or, I would imagine ChatGPT would probably say no to this request, but Dark GPT comes up with, right? And so to me, I think that's the really interesting part there. And, it's kind of plays well with that earlier conversation that we had about lowering the barrier to entry. AI is, it allows people to do things that they probably couldn't do without AI. Anybody who's waded through the Stack Overflow, question responses, it's not always super clear. So AI kind of makes that a lot more consumable. And Cursor, it'll do the changes for you. So yeah, I think that's kind of where my brain goes. It's less of a, does this really shift the needle dramatically for everything? And more so, what does this do on the margins?
Yeah, I think those are great points. And I think that when it comes to the industry, right, and the industry adopting tools, if you really look at the bulk of capabilities that are out there now, the AI that's really being baked into most offerings is really like kind of taking the concept of generative AI or natural language conversation with the AI, and you're using that to enhance the ability of the person in your SOC, right? Your CTI analyst, right? And it's making research faster. And I think it's basically taking their tedious tasks and speeding them up. So it's making them a little bit more powerful in their capabilities. That in itself is not going to dramatically fix a cybercrime problem specifically. I think we're at the very beginning of the industry using the LLMs to do really powerful things, right? And I think we've kind of moved to a place where finally security companies are starting to bake LLMs into their offering to figure out how can we do analysis that goes way beyond what we were able to do without LLMs, right? How can we better detect crime? How can we predict what the next crime is going to be? And certainly that's what we're doing with the SpikeLab products. But I think as an industry, those are things that are new, right? Those are things that we don't know how to understand how effective they are, how well they work, how to deploy them, how to do these things at scale. Those are all things that are new. So I think the CISOs and the survey, I mean, it kind of shows that they're looking at AI with a little bit of skepticism, like, well, how is it really going to move the needle? And I think we're only at the beginning of starting to understand that. Let's see. So, Trevor, let's talk about malware.
Ooh, my
So,
favorite.
I know. So malware, this report talks to you a little bit about the changes in the malware environment. I know that, you and I have talked. The industry, we've talked a lot about what's happened with Redline diminishing in the world and Luma jumping up in the world. What's the latest? What's going on as far as malware goes?
Yeah, so just to kind of position this, obviously we're talking about a very specific kind of malware, generally called info stealers. I would include keyloggers in that, although we don't see as many keyloggers as we used to. But these are what I would refer to as commodity malware. A lot of them are sold as malware as a service, which is basically just a model of selling something where you have the actual software itself, as well as support for that software, as well as all of the tools that you would need to actually make use of that software. So just like, everybody knows, I think at this point, what SaaS is, there's an equivalent in mass that is has, not this is not a new thing. This has been happening for years, but certainly gaining prominence, even more so. As far as that where we are, you mentioned Redline. Back in 2024, we saw some fantastic work by U.S. and international law enforcement to take down Redline. That also impacted Meta, which was at the time basically a fork of Redline. That has effectively gotten rid of those, which is objectively a win, and I think we should all celebrate that. However, not to put a damper on the enthusiasm here, it has not solved the problem, right? This type of info-stealing malware, continues to be a huge threat in volume, in targeted attacks, you name it. I would say, the king of the hill at this point is Lumacy 2. That is it targets Windows exclusively. It's relatively cheap. It's relatively full featured. It's very well supported. It receives regular updates. Has a vibrant community of users that share tips and tricks on how to infect the most victims and earn the most money. We see a lot of that kind of the proceeds then go certainly towards ransomware and more enterprise focused attacks, but also much lower skill, lower effort things like crypto draining and financial fraud, that kind of stuff. So that's kind of the king of the hill. We see some other Radamathus is still there. We see SteelC occasionally. Certainly Lumacy 2 has it for Windows. And then on the Mac OS side, we do see Atomic, also called Amos, online, is still on the order of a few thousand a month at least, infections. We have another stealer, another Mac OS targeted stealer that we haven't been able to figure out what the actual name is yet. A month of unique infections of Mac products, of Mac OS running products. And that's also kind of an interesting subtext too, because as we see businesses, turning more towards using Mac devices, I've heard from several, people that are kind of going through these processes. One of the reasons that they cite often is security. They're not infallible. Our families that target Mac OS, they do a pretty good job of pulling things like keychain and secrets from those devices. So I would say, the TLDR of that is they're still happening. We've seen some success. Law enforcement has done some great work on taking down some of these families. But, unfortunately, this is an engine that just keeps on running. And I really don't see an end in sight.
Let's talk about phishing for a moment. Survey respondents talked about how phishing was seen by them as the entry point for ransomware in 35% of attacks, up 10% from last year. And so, we definitely see phishing is the problem that just will not go away. I feel like it's been here since the creation of the computer. It feels like almost, but probably not quite that long. And we certainly are starting to see it be industrialized by the criminals, right? Where there's those phishing as a service platforms are only scaling up and their capabilities. What are you seeing as far as phishing and growth in the phishing ecosystem goes?
Yeah, this is so funny because I think actually I'm pretty sure there's going to be a Wikipedia that's going to prove me wrong when I say this, but I'm pretty sure the first phish was like in the late 90s or something like that. I remember being on AOL Instant Messenger in the early 2000s and getting like obvious phishing messages, right? I think, so yeah, phishing is not new, which is this, it's so funny that this continues to be such a huge problem. But it absolutely does. And honestly, I mean, phishing has gone the way of malware, and turned into a commodity. As of the recording, we track 18 distinct kits. Named kits that are being sold and used. A lot of them are well, I don't know. They range in how good they are, how well written they are. But a lot of them are quite good, and we do see a lot of very large enterprises unfortunately showing up in the phish data. So they're making an impact. There's definitely a path between phish data and ransomware, especially for some of the more sophisticated kits. That can, for example, be a man in the middle for cookies. MFA bypass effectively is what the goal there is. We also see Fish is targeting things like non-human identities, like API tokens. We see them targeting things like, crypto seed phrases. So there's just a range of threats that that these fish kits pose. And I think the availability of them and kind of how cheaply they are to obtain makes them pretty dangerous. And I do think we will see more fish kits, more commodity kits, and better commodity kits in the years to come, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think it's been interesting for me in talking to enterprises and CISOs that everybody understands the fish threat exists. Everybody fights it with security awareness training or some move into human risk management. But I still think most enterprises don't quite realize the scale of what's happening with fish. And the reason that it continues to be a business for the criminals is that it continues to work, and they just get more and more sophisticated in how these systems do the work for the other actors, right? And the providing of that service. And it's so easy to fish, and you just need a few clicks. You get one admin credential, and man, you just made a ton of money on what is a really low cost service that's being provided. And so it's a very interesting part of the dark net, and it's so effective, even if the numbers of victims are low, but they're not, they're very high. It's so effective, it is not going away. This is only gonna continue to scale, just like we continue to see malware scale until we figure out a way to really make those credentials that they're stealing, or those assets that they're stealing, completely ineffective, right? And that's really the big step we need to take as a group. Yeah, thanks for joining our conversation. And for more information about all of the details we've talked about, those stats, please check out our new identity threat report, available at spycloud.com.